You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs.
And I'm Adam Mattis from Locked On Nuggets.
So it's another podcast network crossover. Of course, we're talking about two teams in very different places, but Wednesday's game in Denver is sneaky important, I think, for both teams. The Cavs are facing the Boston Celtics, kind of pushing up the standings, and the Nuggets are in a really interesting battle for the 8 seed at West. Adam, where are the Nuggets just generally at right now? So my listeners at Locked On Cavs kind of know what they're getting into.
They have been holding down the 8th seed in the Western Conference for about 4 or 5 weeks. They've been the favorite. Portland, the biggest challenger. They had a very interesting trade where they traded Yusef Nurkic for Mason Plumlee. And basically since that trade, not that these two things are perfectly correlated, although they're slightly correlated, Portland has really improved quite a bit and now has overtaken, in my opinion, overtaken Denver as the favorite to get that 8th seed. They now are tied. Both teams are tied in the loss column, and Portland has by far the easier schedule. So Denver is now, for the first time in a couple weeks, finding themselves kind of as the underdog to make the playoffs rather than the favorite.
I mean, that's what I was going to ask you about, was the Nurkic trade. Is there any regret on the Nuggets? And I know from talking to you on Twitter that I don't really get the sense that you feel that there should be any, or that there is any, because of Nurkic's attitude in Denver. But from the fan community or the team, is there any of that regret?
It has been the most divisive topic in my 3 years covering the team, just amongst fans. I think, you know, the comment section on Denver Stiffs and on some other different platforms has gotten a little bit ugly, honestly, lately, because Yusef Nurkic was a player that showed so much promise when he was here. He was kind of the first big rookie to break out 3 years ago, kind of the first big of the player of the new generation to break out, and everybody saw the potential. His attitude sort of deteriorated, and his willingness and to really play for this team deteriorated as time went on, and especially after around December, when it was clear, when he was just struggling, and then Jokic was coming on, and it was clear he was kind of the backup, he really didn't handle that well, and unfortunately, it from my perspective, really just kind of quit, and his value tanked. So that's why it's such a difficult subject, and I think why it's such a divisive one, because some fans see him as this player that had a ton of upside, and why did the team let him down? And other people see it as he quit on the team and he let the team down and ended up costing them by being forced to trade him and include a first-round draft pick for Mason Plumlee. So I think both things are actually true. I think Nurkic is a guy with a ton of potential. He's showing that in Portland, and he did quit on this team. And there's probably better ways that the Nuggets could have handled him, knowing that Jokic was the guy going forward. But there were probably things they could have done to either trade him earlier when his value was higher or to try to placate him until they could get a better trade out of him. So, unfortunately, it turned into a real lose-lose situation for Denver. But moving on from that, Mason Plumlee has been pretty good in Denver, and the Nuggets have actually been better since that trade. They just haven't been as much better as Portland has been since the trade.
What do you think makes Portland because like you said, they're the favorite right now to get that playoff spot. What do you think makes them the favorite?
The Nuggets have, I believe, 9 out of their last 13 games are on the road, and their home games include this one against the Cavs, which I think they'll be home underdogs. Whereas Portland has 10 home games of their remaining 13 or 14 games at home, so they kind of have opposite schedules in that. And on top of that, Portland has a tiebreaker with Denver. They are 2-1 so far. They play one more time, so at best the Nuggets will split, and then the tiebreaker goes to the division record, where the Trailblazers are so far ahead in the divisional record that they'll win that tiebreaker. So those are the things. And then on top of that, you know, Portland has just been good. Damian Lillard, as he did last year, has been on a tear since not making the All-Star game and closing out the season so hot. He's really willed the team to wins last week, over San Antonio on the road, over Atlanta on the road, and over Miami. And Lillard stepped up in all of those games just in ways that made you think, okay, this team's not going to give up the 8 seed.
Yeah, they have McCollum too, and Nurkic. It feels like every day I'm getting I'm seeing articles about how well he played the night before, because he's just kind of been a bulldozer for them. And I think I read something that his screening, someone's been saying that his screening's been really useful to freeing up Lillard. It's an interesting fit, but I mean, it probably only was going to happen in Portland from everything you and Matt Moore and a bunch of other guys and that write about the Nuggets have sort of tweeted about. I watched the Nuggets play the Rockets on Tuesday. And I saw you tweet about this. The end of that game had to be kind of debilitating if you're a Nuggets fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nuggets fans are used to this level of torment. But it was one of those games where the Nuggets were 9-point underdogs going in. They weren't supposed to win that one. They're missing Gallinari, Wilson Chandler. They're starting a rookie, Juancho Hernan Gomez. So the deck was sort of stacked against them. But they ended up playing incredibly well. They hit a ton of clutch baskets throughout the game. Whenever the Rockets would pull away, the Nuggets would pull right back. And they did everything they needed to except for the final 7 seconds. I mean, literally 7 seconds. They're up, they have the ball, they take a shot, and then nobody stops James Harden as he goes from about 1 inch on the baseline on one end, from about the 1 inch mark, all the way down completely unencumbered and gets an easy layup, wide open layup. And that's just kind of been the Nuggets season all year. They're really, really good, but they've blown so many games late, and they just don't have the consistent defensive focus. So if there was a way for them to lose, it was by not picking up an MVP candidate in transition, 90 feet from the basket with 7 seconds left. That was the most Nuggets loss of the season.
that's a fair way to put it. That's frustrating. It's got to just be frustrating too, especially when you're in the middle of that playoff race, and every game, I think, matters for them right now.
You know how it is? I expected to lose that game, but then when you're in it, then you're thinking, well, maybe they'll win. Oh, no, I should have just never got my hopes up to begin with. And that's kind of what that game was.
That was like every time the Cavs put up a fight against a good team in the pre-LeBron era, when like Deion and Kyrie were running the show. That was my life. They're in that battle for the 8 seed. What do you think it would mean for the team and for the hardcore Nuggets fans, for them to make the playoffs again? Like, what do you think that would represent?
This, of all the teams that are vying for the playoffs, Dallas, Portland, New Orleans, Minnesota, I think the Denver fan base and Denver franchise had the most to gain from making the playoffs, because they've been last in attendance. Their media and online presence, their TV presence has just been terrible over the last 4 seasons. And there's a lot of optimism with this team, especially with the way they've played since, you know, mid-December. They've really been one of the best teams. They've been the best offensive team in the entire NBA. And making the playoffs, I think, would have just gone so far to bringing fans back. They're a very young team. Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, those guys are 23 or younger. And I think it would have been an excellent opportunity to kind of regain fan interest and start what is hopefully a run of very successful basketball in Denver. Unfortunately, if they miss out like I think they are, the odds are that momentum will be a year delayed, because I think fans here, you know, you make the playoffs, that's kind of big enough for the casual fans to buy in and maybe consider buying tickets or season tickets next year. Whereas if you miss the playoffs, that just becomes the story. The story doesn't become Nikola Jokic and all these good things that have happened. The story is they missed the playoffs again, huh? I guess, you know, we'll wait till they're good again. So I think the Nuggets have a lot at stake.
I think that's interesting. I think that's, you do have to kind of galvanize fans. I think you saw the same thing with the Cavs pre-LeBron, that they had a win to get people interested. The attendance was really low. There was very little chatter about it, a lot of Browns talk. I think you get the same thing in Denver. It's like a lot of Broncos sports radio.
Exclusively Broncos. This is a Broncos town, and it always will be. But, you know, the Nuggets can slice into the leftover pile of fans that are, you know, they always say that this is a Broncos town and one other team, and that team just rotates. Sometimes it's the Rockies, sometimes it's the Avs. The Nuggets, it's kind of the Nuggets' turn. But like I said, I think it's going to be a year delayed, unfortunately.
Speaking of things that are, I guess, kind of delayed, what's up with Emmanuel Mudiay?
There's a lot to him. I mean, he came in and played last night in Houston and played pretty well, knocked down some shots. I think he had the biggest plus-minus on the team. The problem is, one of the things that happened with the Nuggets in this rebuild that I didn't expect was they ended up getting too many prospects in similar positions. And kind of like you had with Philadelphia, the positions kind of cannibalized each other, right? So you had Jameer Nelson, who was supposed to be the steadying force, the vet that comes off the bench and mentors. Then you have Jamal Murray, and then you have Emmanuel Mudiay. One of those guys is not going to play. And the Nuggets, for most of the season, that was Jamal Murray. He was playing 5 to 10 minutes here or there. But I think as the season has gone on, they've seen more promise in Murray than they do in Mudiay, and now Mudiay's minutes are cut. I wouldn't be surprised if Mudiay – first of all, I wouldn't be surprised if he was traded in the offseason, and it could be another Nurkic-like situation where he turns a corner once he gets a fresh start and kind of a situation that better fits him. But I just don't – I don't know that it's going to happen in Denver, because the Nuggets either next year come back with Jameer and then have three point guards, or they come back without Jameer and they have two young, unproven point guards, and that alone can tank a season.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like Mike Malone's MO either. You know, like it doesn't seem like something he'd be good with.
It's not. Honestly, his biggest weakness has been, and this is, I still like Malone. I still have some hope for him as, you know, as a coach that kind of grows in certain areas, but he's just not good at managing a huge rotation. And the Nuggets have 11 or 12 guys that are all kind of even. You know, they all can get minutes, and you can make a case for one or the other, or tonight this is the matchup you like. But what's happened with injuries and through inconsistencies and Malone tinkering, the Nuggets have 28 starting lineups this year. That's just too many. There's been no consistency. Players have complained about that. And I think if there's one thing you really criticize Malone for, it would probably be the way that he's handled the rotation and handled that many guys. But to his credit, that's a really tough thing for a coach to do.
100% hard to do. I think it's a thing Ty Lue's going to have to deal with in a couple weeks once everyone is fully healthy and they're actually trying to play everybody and try to go for it. The last question I have for you, and then we can flip this on its head a little bit. You tweeted something about Jokic's defense slipping a little bit, and he's not necessarily regarded as like a great defender or anything, but he's been solid, and you're a big advocate of his on that end. But when I tweeted you about this, you were like, it's not his workload. It's not because he's doing so much on offense. Right. So what do you think it is with his defense is slipping a little bit at this point in the year?
Well, I think it's concerning to me that every player on the Nuggets has taken a step back defensively. And this Nuggets team, nobody's in – it's not a physical thing. Gallinari's 29. You know, he's one of the older guys on the team. These guys, it's not that they're over the hill or anything, but every player has taken a step back. Gary Harris, if you watch him, and in college he was a defensive stopper. You watch him in the NBA, and when he's playing one-on-one defense, he's a defensive stopper. But his habits on the defensive end from a team perspective, a scheme perspective, have just been so bad. So when I look at Jokic, he's not Rudy Gobert. I think people always think of centers as like there's one way to play defense, and that's like Rudy right. Gobert. And if you're not Rudy Gobert, you're bad. But the truth is there's a lot of different ways for a center to play defense. Marc Gasol's a phenomenal defender. He's nothing like Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. So I think Jokic is more of a Marc Gasol-type player. He's very smart. He sees the game two or three steps ahead of the average NBA player, and he kind of anticipates really well. But unfortunately, I think some of this has been scheme. They drop him back really, really low in pick and rolls, and then he's often caught kind of in between when to step up and when to stay home. And then on top of that, I think just some of the, like, focus things I think this happened with Mudiay too, and here's kind of an interesting thing I'm learning as watching the NBA season to season. Jokic he came in, he didn't really expect much of himself, to be honest. You can ask him about it. He never thought he was going to be more than a bench-type player in the NBA. Then he's a starter. Then all of a sudden he's one of the best prospects and really just kind of dominating the league. Quite frankly, Nikola Jokic is a top 20 player. And he's just been so good that I wonder if that's kind of curbed his motivation a little bit. I'm watching video of him last year for Serbia in the Olympics, and the guy was really trimmed and thin and looking great. And I'm looking at him now, and it looks like he's added 15, 20 pounds of just kind of blubber, not muscle, but just blubber. And I wonder if things have come, he's had so much success that he's taken his foot off, you know, trying to prove himself night in and night out. And the difference between a young guy that becomes a top 20 player and a guy that can be a top 5, 10 player really is that mental edge and that drive. And as much as I love Jokic, he's probably my favorite player in the league. Him and LeBron probably number one and number two. I just the next now that we start to grade him on a different curve, that curve will be how much does he push himself? Because I know he has the defensive potential. I know he can get in better shape. It's just, will he going forward? What kind of things is he going to work on?
I think that's interesting. I think that's an interesting theory. And I think, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, especially if it's not, I mean, if it's not his workload, like, I think that's the obvious solution. So let's flip this on its head a little bit. What do you think your listeners might want to know about the calf? Just hit me with whatever you got.
Well, I was going to, let me expand on the last point, because just kind of drawing to LeBron James, as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about it, but he came out and his first game in the NBA, he was, you could just tell, like, okay, this guy's on another level. This guy's a special player. And 2, 3, 4 seasons in, you're like, okay, this guy's a top, you know, 5, 6, 7 player, but he could have sort of stayed as a top 5, 6, or 7 player as opposed to the best player of 20 years. But it takes that other drive and the constantly learning and adding stuff to this game. And that's the thing I wonder about with Jokic and his motivation. But turning to the Cavs, we kind of hinted at it. The Nuggets had a problem with their rotation. And I think with the Cavs, part of what makes them so fascinating, you have a nice pecking order. It goes LeBron, then it goes Kyrie, then it probably goes Kevin Love. But then after that, you've got a bunch of different guys on the roster that you can kind of mix and match to give different looks. How important do you think it is for them to get reps with everybody healthy before the playoffs? Or do you think that just having the continuity of like the 8 or 9 core guys for a couple years, that won't be so much of an issue?
I think it's an issue, but not a defining one. The thing that's really interesting is that Kyle Korver's been here in Cleveland for several weeks now. J.R. Smith is not back. Mont Shumpert's been healthy despite a couple of ding-ups. Those three guys have not played a game together yet. And Korver's missed 7 games with a foot injury. He may make his return in Denver. We're probably going to find out right before the game. But they haven't played a minute together yet. And Ty Lue has talked about wanting to play those J.R. and Korver in particular together at the end of games.
No, you go ahead, actually.
I think they have these things they have to figure out. I think they don't know necessarily what is going to work best. I think they're going to have their things to fall on. They're going to fall on the starting lineup that won in the finals last year. They're going to fall on lineups where RJ comes in and they either have Tristan or Kevin Love at the 5. I think they're going to really, really utilize Korver and J.R. Smith together. I think there are little things like where do you best play Deron Williams? Do you use Derek Williams as a stretchy guy? Do you play Channing Frye a lot? There's these little things I think they have to figure out. And they can't do that until they're healthy. And I think, to me, more so than where I think their defense is at, which not good, with some of the other issues, I think just them getting reps as a group matters more than anything.
You know, it's funny because I was talking to Ryan Morton, who writes and tweets mostly tweets for Fear the Sword, but
our Las Vegas correspondent, as I like to call him.
Las Vegas correspondent. There you go. And I was trying to sell him on Nurkic before the trade because I was, you know. Nobody watches Denver. I mean, I think they're like the least watched team in the NBA. And I was trying to say, look, this guy's really good. You can't look at his stats. His stats look bad, but he's just buried on the bench. And he was a guy I thought Cleveland had to get really creative and almost lucky. I think Griffin has done just an incredible job on making something out of nothing with these trades. But he was a guy I wanted Cleveland to take a chance on because they didn't have anything that I think the Nuggets wanted, but they could have maybe worked out a kind of a complex deal because if the Nuggets were willing to trade him and a first-round pick for Mason Plumlee, my guess is they would have been able to trade him alone for, you know, something not that great, maybe an early second-round pick or something like that. And I think just seeing it how he's playing now, you can imagine what kind of impact he would have. Maybe not, he wouldn't be playing and starting and playing 33 minutes, but even as just kind of this, like, situational big, I think it would have helped the team quite a bit.
You know, I think you and I talked about that as well, and I think it would have made sense because, I mean, Bogut got hurt, obviously, but he was at a certain age. And Larry Sanders is a very far away from playing. I went and saw him play in his D-League debut, and he physically is moving guys. He physically looks okay.
Oh, wow.
But he's so rusty.
Yeah.
He's so rusty. His timing's really off, and it's going to take him time. Like, I think it'd be a shock if he had a meaningful moment during this year's title run.
Oh, that's interesting. What is your favorite lineup now? Because as I said, they have so many different combinations. What is the lineup you're most curious to see them use?
Well, I know what to expect out of the starters. So I guess my answer would be because I haven't seen it yet. Kyrie, Korver, J.R. Smith, LeBron, and RJ. That would be my five. Like, yeah. Really small. But also, you could go take RJ out of that and put in Thompson or Love, and I'd want to see that too. I really want to see the Korver JR pairing, because I think it can be good enough defensively against the right team where they're not going to lock down guys necessarily, but they're going to create so much spacing. They're going to create just chaos for other teams when they're going to scrambling around, chasing LeBron and Kyrie and then having to find those shooters. Like, but Channing Frye in that lineup as well. I think Love is sort of the good medium because he's going to rebound, he's going to shoot, and he's going to defend decently enough when it matters. And I just think the Korver-JR pairing on the wing to me is really, really good. They're both really good shooters, both can defend, both know their role off LeBron. That's where I really want to see how that works.
The thing I like about what the Cavs have put together, you know, is not necessarily the five-man combinations are going to be really good, but up and down the court. But what I really like is Cavs ball, game tied, 10 seconds left. I have like a 95% confidence you guys will win, because you can throw out, if you don't have to worry about defense, it's just an offensive possession. You could throw out Kyrie, LeBron, that's a given. And then you could throw out some combination of J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, Kevin Love, and Channing Frye. So three of those four. And the gravity, like, I don't know how you defend that play, because the Kyrie LeBron pick and roll is unstoppable. You have to help. And how do you help off? Who do you help off there? Channing Frye, Kevin Love, Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith. That's just a guaranteed like 60-70% chance on an open three, I think, every single time. So I think that's part of what, and Tyronn Lue, by the way, is really good at this. He's good at recognizing, like, okay, we have a timeout to use. It's the end of the first quarter. Let's call a timeout here to get our guys on the court and just drop this really simple, unstoppable play.
So it's my favorite thing about him as a coach. He has such a good feel for timeouts and when he knows his guys need a second to recalibrate.
It's hard. It's always hard to know who's a good coach, because, like, I think a lot of people would do well with LeBron and Kyrie and even Blatt. Like, give him, you know, complain all you want. They still went to the finals and had a pretty good record.
Crazy thing about Blatt is I'm writing a piece now about the team's defense, and that when Blatt was the coach during the beginning of last season, that was the only time over a meaningful stretch when the team has had a defensive rating under 100 was under Blatt before he got fired.
That probably leads me to another good question, which is, are you concerned about this team's defense? Because I've seen the metrics from, you know, like the calendar, is the calendar turned, and since the All-Star break. Is that just your typical LeBron March malaise, or is this team just not very good defensively?
I don't think they're great defensively, and I think there are certainly issues with the continuity that we talked about. But per synergy, they're last in the league in transition defense. They have the highest defensive rating that they've ever had over a meaningful stretch right now. As we record this, it's like 107.2. It's about 2 points worse than where they were at pre the Mozgov trade during the 2014-15 season.
Yeah,
it's not good. And defense is a little bit down this year by about 2 points overall.
Right.
Offenses are just better right now. So it's, you know, like that accounts for some variance there. But I think you have a team that has to figure out its defensive identity. And along with continuity, I think continuity solves a lot of that. And LeBron playing with more effort,
right,
Kyrie playing with more effort helps. And JR is, it's crazy to say this, but JR Smith is an invaluable wing defender on this team. he's been really good. He's better than Jumper. He's better than Korver. Better than RJ, in my opinion.
I trust J.R. Smith for a possession. Like, if you have to get a stop and he's out there, like, I trust him. I don't trust him for a quarter and certainly not for a game.
He locked down Kyle Korver 2 years ago for a whole series. Year for a whole series. And I'm in it. Like, that guy can buy in. Like, LeBron gets that guy to buy in.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Harder against the Warriors and stuff, but he has the ability to do it.
I'll tell you what. If you're going to be bad at defense, being bad at transition defense is the way to go, because I have quite a bit of confidence, just how the Cavs have played a team like the Warriors, for example. I have quite a bit of confidence that they can cut off transition opportunities no problem in a series. So if they're bad, honestly, if you were to tell me, people talk, is LeBron coasting in the regular season or whatever, the way he coasts is by not getting back every single time, because who would? You know, like, who's going to sacrifice your body to run 90 feet sprinting to try to get a chase down block every single time? So I think, yeah, they're bad at transition defense, but I would be surprised if they were bad at transition defense in a playoff series when it mattered.
Of note, they were number one in transition defense in the playoffs last year.
So there you go. Exactly.
Yeah. I think the question is, like, they'd have to make a bigger leap this year from bottom third overall in defensive ratings are that bad in transition to getting up to where Golden State and San Antonio are. That's a bigger leap than they ever attempted. That's kind of where my concern lies.
So let's get a prediction for tomorrow night, because as you mentioned, both teams need it. I think Denver needs it a lot more,
yeah.
But obviously Cleveland is the better team. So, and I know Cleveland's kind of been a little bit up and down, although this is the time of year where they really start to kind of turn the Jets on. Denver, again, it's another matchup of Denver's really, really good at scoring in the half court. The Cavs have kind of been a little bit soft defensively lately. How do you see this one going?
I think if Korver plays, I think they come out with more energy. I think the altitude matters. I think the fact that they've had a couple of days off in L.A. leads me to think they might be a little bit lackadaisical coming into this game, although they're getting into Denver not the day of, they're getting in the night before, so they're probably going to have a relatively chill night in Denver unless they do the smart thing and go to one of the many breweries in Denver, because that's what I would do when I went to Denver. That's what I would do if I were to go to Denver, but I think it's a close game. I think the altitude, and I think the Nuggets just having more of a need to win this game certainly impacts it, and I think the Cavs have the time off for them is certainly going to help. I think it's close. I think the Cavs maybe win by two or three, but it wouldn't shock me if the Cavs kind of did what they did on Sunday against the Lakers and kind of lollygag their way through most of the game before trying to turn up the defensive pressure in the fourth.
Well, I'm hoping for the latter. The Danilo Gallinari and Wilson Chandler are still questionable for tomorrow. The Nuggets are kind of coy. I'm guessing we won't actually know if they're playing until tip-off. But if that happens, then that means Juancho Hernangómez is once again going to be guarding LeBron James. Rookie who's giving up about 40 pounds of muscle and probably about 200% of the strength, right? I mean, LeBron, yeah. The last time they played, I almost felt bad for Juancho because he's given some really good defensive effort against other guys. But LeBron was the one guy that kind of just treated him like a third grader and just ran right through him to the basket and got the and one every single time. So if Juancho has to be the guy to guard LeBron, then I don't think this one is close. But if Gallo or Wilson is back, I think the Nuggets, they've been pretty scrappy lately. Even though they didn't win, they played back-to-back against Houston and lost by a total of 5 points. I think Denver might actually get this one. But again, if Wilson doesn't play and Gallo doesn't play, then good night.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it, though. I mean, I haven't I'm of the opinion that the Cavs are more interesting when they've had time to rest. The back-to-back stuff is frustrating, and I think they're not going to rest anybody this game. I think everyone's going to play, and if Korver's back, that would kind of be the biggest victory. If you're a Cavs fan, I think the biggest thing out of this game is Kyle Korver back, because they could have their lead, I think, slipped down to one game or a game and a half. Can't remember if Boston plays Wednesday, but I'm not too worried about that. I wouldn't be too worried about the standings if I were the Cavs, to be honest.
I wouldn't either. I mean, LeBron, I always say LeBron can win a game by himself if he really wants to. And they've got a three loss cushion. I think if that got down to one or something, he would make it work. But I wouldn't be worried at all.
Yeah, I would think rest and continuity matter more than that one seed. And because I like 538, I would love 538. They have the Celtics as a 2% better chance of the Cavs than the Cavs of winning the title this year. They're at 7%. The Cavs are at 5. I find that bonkers.
Yeah, that's when numbers go wrong, right? I mean, the Celtics are a fine team. They'll be a challenge in a playoff series. But come on now, I mean,
yeah.
LeBron's
time is not yet. Like he's getting eerily close to the Kobe minutes. He's gonna pass MJ this year, but I don't think it's his time just yet.
Gonna be strange whenever that happens. I'm not ready for it. LeBron and I are the same age, so him kind of going on the decline will mimic my own athletic mortality, and that'll be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That'll be that. He's the basketball player that I first watched and grew up watching, so that'll be like a definite end of an era for me, absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, so this has been Locked On Cavs, Locked On Nuggets. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Absolutely, it's been fun.
Yeah, find us both. I think you can find both of us on Twitter, me at TDBimWrites, Adam at Adam_Mares. Locked On Cavs on Twitter, Locked On Napa Know
How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Nuggets on Twitter, and go give us those five-star ratings and reviews.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.